Our speaker tonight is Jamie from York, PA.
Hi everybody, my name is Jamie Filippelli and I am an alcoholic. Allow me to apologize for being late. I was sure that we were never finding our way here or home again. And I apologize for wearing jeans also. I generally would wear dress slacks, but I recently have been faced with a condition that I contracted in my active alcoholism, which has put me through a bit of a trial over the summer, and found out I lost a ton of weight in this condition. Thank you very much for having me. It's an honor to speak at an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting or to do anything for Alcoholics Anonymous. I hope that God kicks in here in a few minutes because I'm a nervous wreck, which is very unusual for me. My sobriety date is January 14th of 2001. I am a member of the Roosevelt 12 and 12 group. We meet Wednesday nights at 8 o'clock in York. If you're ever in the area, please come see us. We have a great time. We enjoy sobriety. My sponsor tells me that that's what this is about. Didn't get sober to hang in there or hang on. I got sober to have a life. And let me just tell you, I don't have the life that I had when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm glad. If any of you find that life, you're welcome to it. I don't want it anymore. I didn't know what I was getting when I came to AA. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous through a rehab, which a lot of people do, and I saw the 12 sentences of AA on the board in a little pull-down shape. And I was sure that I was screwed, because there was no way that those 12 little sentences were going to fix my life. There was no way. You know, I was about $150,000 in debt. I had burned every single bridge in my life. My loving Italian Catholic family had run me out and told me, if you ever come back, we're going to throw you in jail. They had every right to do so. Needless to say, they were at the top of my resentment list because I'm such a good son. I was supposed to be caring for my mother who has Alzheimer's, and she was caring for me with all the money that she had. And she didn't know it, actually. I was responsible for our selling our family home. I was responsible for her being put into assisted living, which is a horrible situation for my family. And I thought I was doing an amazing job. Amazing job taking care of this woman. The last time that I walked into that house, I had been gone for about 7 or 10 days, and I'm supposed to be caring for my mother. She's got Alzheimer's, and she can do absolutely nothing for herself. And I'm faced with that look. You know, that look that we all become very accustomed to. And for the first time receiving that look, my sister put words to it. She voiced the things that were going through her head. And she just looked at me as if she didn't know me. And she said, "What are you doing? Who are you? You know, what are you doing? How long has she been here by herself? You know, you've been like this all of your life. All you do is drink. That's all you care about." And I thought those were the hardest questions I'd ever been asked, because she looked at me as if she didn't even know me. And but the hardest questions were when I asked myself those same questions. What am I doing? You know, why am I like this? I had started drinking, I don't know, probably early in my teenage years. I know that I was blacking out on a consistent basis when I was 16. I didn't think that I had fear in my life. I thought I was just a kid. You know, you just toddle through life and do what kids do. But when I discovered alcohol, I drank really early. I drank probably before I was even 10. my family would have their friends over, and anybody that was under 21 years old was not allowed to drink in the house. But if there were people that came over that were of age, they would bring beer or whatever. And I remember the little cheese spread glasses that you pop the lid off. They used to give me a little bit of beer in this little glass, and I would take a couple of sips, and I'd get some attention, and I liked that. But I don't believe that that was when I started seeking alcohol. I started seeking alcohol when I found out what alcohol did for me. And alcohol does the same thing to everybody. You know, you take a couple of drinks, you get drunk. You know, it does the same thing to everybody. But what I found that it did for me was it made me not afraid. It made me not afraid anymore. It removed the fear from me completely. I was afraid of everything, and I didn't think that I was. But it made me basically okay with being alive. You know, my motto throughout my entire existence was life sucks and then you die. And I believed it, because if you were walking in my shoes, you'd have believed it too. You know, I was the youngest of 8 kids, and I never got anything. I was sure it was my brothers and sisters' fault. Couldn't have a dog, couldn't have a hamster. Couldn't go in the Navy, couldn't do this, couldn't do that, and I was sure that it was all their fault. So I was oppressed. I was put upon. And I hated my life, basically, you know, and I found this stuff. I found this stuff, and it just made everything okay, you know. It made it okay for me to exist on this planet. It was like the lubricant for life for me. And very early, it became the most important thing in my life. You know, I put everything out of the way to drink. You know, nothing else in my life was important. And I had aspirations. I wanted to be a good brother. I wanted to be a good son. I wanted to be a good friend, a good worker among workers. And I probably got away with some of those things for a short period of time until drinking really just basically took over. It took me all over the country. I traveled the country throughout my teens and 20s, and I don't remember a thing. You know, I know I was at the Grand Canyon. That's about all I remember from before I got sober. Because I'm a blackout drinker. And I was one of those people who thought if you're not blacking out, you're not doing it right. You know, I just assumed that everybody on the planet blacked out, so I didn't really ever talk to anybody about it. First time that I did, somebody looked at me like I had 3 heads. You know, and I was sort of okay with blackouts because I knew the kind of person that I became when I drank. You know, and there was no common thread for when I got drunk. You know, I was happy or I was belligerent or naked most of the time. And I knew it wasn't me, you know, when I was drinking, but because I would hear stories about the things that I did when I was drinking, and it wasn't me, it was a completely different person. But I was willing to pay the price of being that person to put this stuff into my system that made it okay with me to be alive, you know? I tried just about everything, and my sponsor talks about we used to drink to just get right. You know, I thought I was drinking to get happy or to get free or to get unafraid. And that makes sense to me. I was drinking just to get right, to get on the same level as everybody else on this planet, because I was constantly comparing myself to everybody. You know, I was absolutely worse than everybody or absolutely better than everybody. Sometimes those both of those things at the same time. And booze just kind of leveled me out, you know. So I chased it. There was a period of time where I lived about 8 doors down from that family home that was eventually sold on my behalf. And they didn't know I lived there because I had gone so far into my drinking that whenever they would see me, I would get that look that I got at the end, that look of disgust, that look of shame, you know, that look of not knowing or not wanting to know who you are. And my friends would say to me, why don't you just go down the street? And I would watch my family have a life down the street, 8 doors down the street. How I got in and out of there without them knowing, I have no idea. We're kind of slick. I would watch them have a life, and they would say, why don't you just go down and say hi? You know? And I knew that I couldn't. I wanted with every fiber of my being to go down and be a part of my family, 8 doors down the street. I remember it like it was yesterday. But I knew I couldn't. Because they wanted to tell me about my drinking. I was sure they were going to tell me about my drinking. You know, if you just drink beer, you're going to be okay. You know what I mean? And that might work for some people. I have no idea what normal people drink like. I know that I drink like a pig. You know, I'm going for the effect. I need to get out of here. I need to disappear from the planet. And if they would say things like that, I would have to get them out of my life. Because anything that came between me and the things that I put into my system had to go. They absolutely had to go. And I am truly an alcoholic because I believe I have a spiritual malady. Actually, this summer, with this little condition that I've been not really fighting with so much, but trying to get on top of, basically, there were periods where I thought maybe I was an alcoholic. And let me just tell you, if you ever have any questions about not being an alcoholic, stay away from meetings for a day or two. If you're drunk like me, and I am a hopeless drunk without Alcoholics Anonymous and God, I am absolutely hopeless. What happened was I ended up at the end of the summer knowing for sure, and Lori can attest to this because I've talked to her about stuff that I have no clue about, being in like Deuteronomy. That's written in Deuteronomy. I know it. It's the end of days. You know, that's how a drunk like me ends up when I don't do Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I got sober in New York, Pennsylvania via rehab. And I was very blessed to get involved with a group of people in Alcoholics Anonymous that are maniacs for AA. Basically, you do AA and you smatter some life around it. You know, and I come up with excuses when I'm not doing Alcoholics Anonymous. I come up with excuses like I'm hiding out in AA, like I'm in the bottom of an AA bottle, just like I was in the bottom of a booze bottle. That's my thinking, you know. Or I end up the summer when I haven't been at AA a lot, doing AA like I'm used to, and, you know, I have this idea that in 2012 the world's over and I better do what I can before it's too late. You know, that's the insanity of this alcoholic. And that's just a tiny little example of the things that go through my head. But I got involved with these people, came out of rehab, went to York, scared to death. I thought when I was in rehab I was locked up from the big bad stuff on the streets, you know, because I thought that booze was my problem. I really did. I thought the things that I put into my system were my problem. And so when I had my little, you tell your story at the end of rehab and they unleash you on the streets again, I thought for sure I was going to die, because I know what's out there. You know what I mean? All the big bad stuff is out there waiting on the streets. So they sent me to a recovery house in New York and get a sponsor, get involved in service, wah, 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 all that Charlie Brown stuff that you don't really hear when you're leaving rehab. And so I did that. I showed up at my first AA meeting like an hour and a half early because I'm different from everybody. And I was sure that if I popped into this AA meeting with all these inner city people that they were going to absolutely kill me after the meeting was over. And there was a guy doing what we do. He was in there making the coffee. And I don't think he's sober anymore. I don't even know if he's still alive. But he saved my life because he walked outside. He saw me skulking around the front of the meeting. You know, trying to not let anybody know that I was going into an AA meeting. Now, meanwhile, when I'm sitting in the bar drinking and you're asking me why I drink so much, I say, I'm an alcoholic. Just give me another drink. You know, but I get sober and I don't have my best friend, you know, my strengthener, and I'm scoffing around the meeting because I'm afraid to go in because they'll know I'm an alcoholic. And he came out and he shook my hand and he welcomed me to Alcoholics Anonymous. And he simply said to me, let me show you where the coffee is. And that made it okay for me to go to the next meeting. And went to this little inner city meeting on Beaver Street in North Pennsylvania, and I saw this guy sitting across the room and he seemed really peaceful to me. I didn't know what that was. He seemed something different than I was, I'll say. And he just was confident, and he was just sitting there sharing his experience. And so I immediately went up to him after the meeting was over, and I asked him if he would be my sponsor. And now, I didn't know what I was getting into with this whole sponsorship thing, because I probably wouldn't have known. Although desperation is a great motivator for me, pain and desperation. That's why I'm at this meeting tonight. That's why we would have driven through the country until we found a meeting. I said, well, just go to a meeting and say, am I the speaker here? So I asked this guy to be my sponsor, and he, of course, asked me those questions. Are you willing to go to any length to maintain your sobriety? And, of course, I know the answer to that, yes. You know, he's going to fire me right away if I don't say yes. So I said yes. And, you know, we started going through the steps, and we got to that fourth step. And let me just tell you, the only fear in the fourth step is not doing the fourth step. I have some experience with that. Or leaving some things off of the fourth step. I have some experience with that, too. Because this guy was really normal looking, okay? He had a wife, and he had four kids, and he had a brand new Hyundai, and he had a house, which actually had a white picket fence, and a golden retriever, you know what I mean? And we connected. He was alcoholic. I'm alcoholic. And we got to the fourth step, and let me just tell you that I did whatever it took to get booze. Whatever it took. I gave everything away, including myself and my soul, to get alcohol and the other things that I do. And I did everything. You can put anything in the place of alcohol. If you put your hand out, you got something in it that looks like it might work, I'm going to pop it in my face. And if it works, I'm going to ask you tomorrow what it was, because I need to get out. You know, that was my deal. I just need to get out. Just get me off this planet. That's what booze did for me. Get me out of here because I can't handle it. And so we got to the fourth step, and he gave me directions for the fourth step. And I, of course, took a couple of months to do my fourth step because it's a big deal, you know. It's a lot of stuff to write down. You know, for 37 years, you got a lot of stuff to write down. So I would address it every day, you know what I mean? And I'd write a couple of things down, and then I'd put it down because that's a lot. You know, I'm putting a lot of stuff down on this paper. And then I'd go back in a day or two, and I'd reread everything that I had written the day before. And then I'd be like, oh, no, I can't tell them that stuff. I mean, oh, definitely got to take that one to my grave. And you know which list those are generally on. So I got to this fifth step, and I'm sure that my sponsor and I did a fifth step. I don't know how much further we went into the fifth, because after this point, I think that the relief was gone. Now, I got relief just when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous, because I heard you people talking. And I heard some things, you know what I mean? And I was like, that's a coincidence. You know, you can only have so many coincidences within like a 3-month period before you got to admit something's going on. I didn't admit that. It was all coincidence. So we got to this fifth step, and I gave him my edited version of my fourth step. Because if I'd have told him the things that were on there, this really normal guy with the kids and the picket fence, and he'd have run me right out of here. I was sure of it. I was sure it was the absolute worst person on the planet. I crawled on my stomach through the gutter of life to get to Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't regret any of it. I don't regret a single drink that I took. I don't regret even the things that I have had to not have a family about, you know, because if I hadn't done each of those things, I wouldn't be standing here in Alcoholics Anonymous right now. I can't say that in my first year I didn't regret that stuff, because it was large, you know, and it was looming over me. But I did as much of this fifth step as I allowed myself to do. And then I stopped doing the steps, because you bite off a large chunk. You swallow a large chunk about yourself, you know. I don't see those words like rigorous and immediately launched. I think that I've done this fifth step, and that, you know, I've done a lot of stuff, and I probably should get on with my life here. And so I did. I got a couple of jobs. I was the supervisor of supervisors for the largest catering company on the East Coast. Because I'm a worker, that's what we do. You know, we drunks, we either don't show up for work or we work really hard. And I did both of those, believe me. And so I got this job, and I got another job driving Miss Daisy. Miss Daisy was blind, and she couldn't drive her own car, and she just happened to have this really nice Cadillac, and they just happened to ask me if I would drive her around for a lot of money every day, in addition to the 60-hour-a-week job that I was already doing. And I thought, sure, I'll do that. I'll be making amends to my mother, driving this woman around to her appointments. You know, I don't think about the fact that she's paying me like $100 a day. I'm thinking that I'm making amends until I talk to my sponsor about it. And then, so I'm thinking that I got to put a life back together for myself, because that's what you do, right? You get sober, you look at the trashed life, you get on with it, you put a life back together. So that's what I got about doing. Almost exactly a year sober, I wanted to blow my brains out. Absolutely blow my brains out. And I didn't understand it. And there was this guy that was popping up in meetings and stuff, and he was really annoying. And he had a lot of people with him. And they were going to meetings all together. They traveled in groups and packs. They were like wolves, you know, trying to pull down the weak game. And he was like shiny. You know what I mean? He was like smiling all the time. And he looked like when he spoke at a podium, he floated up to the podium. And he annoyed me. So at this year point, almost a year point in my sobriety, there was this young lady who I was running around with, who we hated each other when we were drinking, which is absolutely hysterical. We worked at restaurants diagonal across the street, so we were competitors. And I met her one time for like a minute, and she was trying to steal my best friend, who was the one that supplied me money when I couldn't get my own money. And so I insisted that she stay away from her because I was sure that she was bad news. And I walked into a meeting one night, and there she is across the room, and we flew into each other's arms, professing how glad that we were there, that each of us were there. I'm so glad to see you. I can't believe that you're here. I know somebody here. And so I watched this girl, and she was a lunatic. She's from Jersey, but that doesn't have anything to do with it. She was a lunatic, absolute lunatic, and she was just as miserable as me. I was sure of it. And in like a month and a half, I watched this girl become a young woman right before my eyes. And this just happened, and there are no coincidences in life. There are none. I know that today. God puts everything in my path exactly where it's supposed to be, exactly when it's supposed to be here. And I watched her change right before my eyes, and we were sitting in a car, in her car outside of the meeting that we had started. And I said, you know, we're almost the exact same amount of time sober, and I want to blow my effing brains out. What are you doing? What are you doing? Because you're peaceful and you're happy. And you come in this meeting like there's not a problem in the world. And the only thing that ever worked like that for me was when I'd walk into the bar and I'd see Jack sitting on the bar there, already ready, because they already always knew what I drank. I didn't even have to put it into my system. My house could have burned down. I could have lost a career job. I walk into the door and there's Jack on the counter. Everything's going to be okay now. The only time I found easy comfort in my life was when I had that stuff put into my system. But she had it. And I knew she wasn't drinking because we hung out a lot. Of course, when I first got sober, I thought for sure, since it was Alcoholics Anonymous, that everybody was smoking pot. Because that's not alcohol. And they were really happy and peaceful. And they had to be doing something. Because if you were walking in my shoes, you weren't happy and peaceful by any means. So this girl said to me, I've been hanging out with these people from Baltimore. And my new sponsor's taking me through the steps. And if you'd like, I'd give them a call for you. And so she did. And I got directions immediately from this guy who I didn't know to read the doctor's opinion. And then I got directions the next day from this guy who I didn't know to read the doctor's opinion. And then I got directions the next day from this guy who I didn't know and didn't like much at this point to read the doctor's opinion. Now I'm thinking that he's calling me stupid, first of all, because I read it already. I didn't understand it any of the times that I read it. You know what I mean? All that I saw in there was, I read some other stuff, and the only thing that I recognized in the big book at all at this point was drinking one might say only drinking one might say to live. And that's what I was doing before I got to AA. I was drinking to stay alive. So we made an appointment to go down and see this guy who I didn't like much, who made me read several times because I'm stupid. That's what my head's telling me. For the first 6 months that I worked with this sponsor, I was sure that he thought I was stupid, so I wouldn't say anything to him because he was so much smarter than me. And we get down to Baltimore, and we go to this little meeting where it's hot and sweaty, and there's like 40 people standing on each side of the door. It's called the gauntlet. And you go in there, and they just all want to shake your hands and hug you. And at this point, I'm like, if the people touch me, I'm going to kill you because I just want to blow all your friggin' brain out. You know, a year sober. Woohoo! Having a good time. And we go to the meeting, and we go outside to this car, and who's sitting in the damn car but the shiny guy? The annoying shiny guy who's floating around York all of a sudden out of nowhere. You know what I mean? And he starts talking to me, and the minute that he started talking to me, the minute I used to tell my sponsor he had me at hello, because he started talking about despair and frustration and guilt and shame and feeling like the loneliest person on the planet, walking into a room with 1,000 people, all of whom I knew, feeling like I was the only one in there who was like me. One of the first things he said to me was, Jamie, you'll never have to be alone again. And I was done. If he'd have told me to stand on my head in the corner and quack like a duck, I probably would be standing on my head in the corner quacking like a duck if I thought that it would keep me sober. And he talked about me. And I thought for sure that my friend Jane had given him a little insider info on me, because he talked to my heart. And it was the first time I've ever heard it in my life. My sponsor calls it the language of the heart, and I know what that is today. You can deny it all you want, but you can't fight it off. So I'm thinking that he's talking about me because he's hitting the nails, every single nail on the head. And I find out that he's talking about himself with that frustration and that despair and the things that we've done in our lives. And immediately after talking about the problem, he began to talk about the solution, which was the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. My sponsor tells me that it's absolutely cruel to not follow the problem up immediately with the solution. And I was floored. I felt like for the first time in my life, somebody on this planet knew where I came from. I used to have visions of being an alien dropped on this planet, that they were just going to watch, see what I would do, because it didn't seem like everybody else on this planet was like me. It was like I was the only one that had all these things going on in my life. And when I talked to the people who looked like they did the things that I did in my act of alcoholism, they looked at me like I had three heads. You know, and I'm thinking, they look just like me. So my sponsor said, Jamie, I'm going to ask you to do something. And I'm going to ask you to do something for yourself. I'm going to ask you to give Alcoholics Anonymous and me 90 days. I'm going to ask you to put everything that you think that you want or you need or you absolutely must have in your life right now on the back burner for 90 days. come and let me show you how I do Alcoholics Anonymous. And I guarantee you at the end of that 90 days, you will be amazed. Not with what happens on the outside, because that takes a while to clean up. But you will be amazed with what happens on the inside. And aside from this little hiatus that I took this summer, I'm still giving them 90 days. My sobriety date is January 14th of 2001, and that sponsor was the sponsor that gave me my first year chip. He said, I'm not going to tell you what to do. I'm not going to make any decisions for you. I'm going to show you what I do. I'm going to show you through my actions how I live Alcoholics Anonymous. And I guarantee you, if you pick up just a few of those tools, you'll be amazed. And that's exactly what he did. I lived in York. He lived in Baltimore. I called him in the morning because he didn't want to hear about my day after I had already started it. He wanted to tell me how to start out my day. He wanted to give me some advice on how to start out the day. First of which started with hitting my knees and praying. Reading 2 pages out of the big book front and back. And helping somebody else. He used to tell me things like, try to do 3 things nice for somebody and don't get caught. I'm like, are you kidding me? You know what I mean? Because I like people. I'm like, yeah, I'm the one who made the coffee this morning. I think that was the first thing that I got away with. The girl who I watched get sober and her boyfriend and I ended up moving into a beautiful farmhouse that I still live in today. And I used to set his coffee maker every night. After they went to bed, I would sneak down from my room and I'd make the coffee. And I was getting away with it for like a year. It was amazing. It felt really good until the day that he came to the bottom of the steps and says, are you the one who's been making my coffee for the last year? And I'm like, yeah, it was me! You know? His father said, well, there goes that right out the window. You better find something else. So this guy started doing crazy stuff like driving from Baltimore to York to pick me up to go to Virginia on a Tuesday night to a meeting. Now, remember, I'm stupid, so I'm not asking any questions. But I'm really questioning in my head. I'm like, there's like 40 meetings tonight alone in York. You know, why are we driving to Virginia to go to a meeting? Because I don't think that we need to. Like, you know, I get to Alcoholics Anonymous homeless. My family has run me out and they're going to throw me in jail, but I don't think we need to drive to Virginia to go to a meeting because I know what life's about. You know, I know how to live, you know? And so I never asked him because I was afraid of him. But somebody did eventually ask him why we do this kind of stuff because we would drive to like Acts of Recovery in Boston and get there just in time to watch the Acts of Recovery and then drive home. I'm like, this is ridiculous, you know? But I'll tell you what, I was so desperate that I was willing to do whatever this man said. My sponsor has never, any of the sponsors that I've had have never led me wrong. They've never lied to me. So he started showing me how to live Alcoholics Anonymous, you know? He started showing me how to sponsor guys. He started telling me things like, Jamie, you've been inconveniencing people all your life. You better damn well be inconvenienced for Alcoholics Anonymous. And I asked him about that doctor's opinion thing, the issue with the doctor's opinion, for the 3 times. He said, well, first of all, I wanted to gauge your willingness to see how desperate you really were. Because there's a lot of guys who want to get who say they want to get sober. There's a lot of guys who say they want to stay sober. But there's a few guys that really do. And that's one of the beginning gauges of whether or not you're willing to do what I'm asking. And he asked me those questions too. Are you willing to go to any lengths to stay sober? And I still answered him yes. Really got in a bind with that because we were driving to Virginia on like a Tuesday night to go to a meeting. And he asked me if I was willing to go to any lengths to maintain and achieve joyful sobriety. I didn't know what that was. Joyful and sobriety in the same sentence. What is that? You know, up to this point, I was miserably sober, you know, and barely sober at best. And so I followed this guy like a little puppy dog, you know, and I did these things that he showed me how to do. And he again took me through the steps. My second sponsor, and the only reason he's not still my sponsor is because there's distance between us and it. I like to have a sponsor that I can watch, because that's what he said. That's another one of the things that he said to me at first was, Jamie, please don't listen to the words that I say only. Please watch what I do. Because if my words aren't meeting my actions, then either tell me about it, or find someone else who's are. And he gave me free rein to take his inventory from day one, you know. And I have on many occasions. Not the better parts, by any means. And I haven't told him. I've talked to other people about it. Because that's what I do. Well, that's what I used to do. I lived with, he sponsored myself and my roommates in the same house. And we used to open the store. We called it, we'd open the store at night. And the only person that we, and what, you, what it means when you open the store is that you're sitting at your own kitchen table and you can talk about anybody in the world. And you can talk about them however you want, you know. But it doesn't go any further than that. Because I get sober and I want to gossip about everybody and I want to point out everybody's flaws and, you know, you're doing this and he's doing that and can you believe they're doing that? And so we would open the store and we would get rid of that stuff and it never left the table. And the funny thing is the majority of the stuff that we talked about was our sponsor. You know? And we used to tear him apart. It was funny. But he would eventually hear about it because he sponsored all three of us. So it was good. It was good in the beginning of sobriety. I'm not telling you to go out and talk about all your friends by any means, because you will pay consequences for it, believe me. And I only know these things through experience. You know, this summer that I just went through, I believe is just experience for me to live and grow spiritually with, because I think I have a lot of good ideas. I really do. Still. Some great ideas. And I end up thinking that it's the end of days. And in 2012, I'm going to be a wreck for the whole year because I don't know when it's going to end. I know it's going to be in 2012, but I don't know which day. So I'm going to be wrecked all of 2012. It was good because I laughed about that in the shower today. And that stuff can, like, cripple me when I just let myself think about it by myself. But, So I followed this sponsor and I got a home group. The White Rose was my home group for a long time, and I got involved in service there, and I've spoken in several places throughout the East Coast, and that's not important to me, that kind of stuff. I appreciate that people ask me to share my experience with them, because when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was a waste of oxygen. You know what I mean? If they'd have put me out, they'd have done the world a favor, was my take on that. And I really didn't know what I was bargaining for when I got into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was an absolute maniac for AA for 8 years. I'm coming up. I will be sober 9 years in January, God willing. I believe that it has absolutely nothing to do with me because I am lazy. I would prefer to sponsor the television if I could, please, all day. I don't feel like I'm chosen. I believe that I was desperate enough, and I believe that God gave me that desperation on January 13th of 2001. See, I had been kicked out by my family. I had been run off by my family. And if I were a problem drinker at that point, I might have stopped drinking. I thought that booze was my problem when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, and with the sponsorship that I have today, I know wholeheartedly that I am not a problem drinker. I am an answer drinker. Booze is absolutely my solution for everything in this world. It's what makes it okay for me to be alive. And what happened in that first year of sobriety for me was that I was not replacing my solution with another solution. And the only solution that works for me today is Alcoholics Anonymous, God, and practice and principles in my life. And I don't just do that in Alcoholics Anonymous anymore. I've been given some amazing opportunities. My dreams have come true in Alcoholics Anonymous, just for simply looking for the guy that's standing out there on the edge of the crowd like I was when I first got here, and walking up to him and saying, "Hey, how you doing? What's your name? Where are you from? How long you been here? Do you know any of these people? Let me introduce you around a little bit." I don't necessarily need to sponsor anybody to help somebody. I don't know what my job is here. I know that I have one today, and that's amazing to me, because I was an absolute worthless piece of crap in my estimation. I love sponsoring people. I absolutely love sponsoring people. I sponsored this guy. His name was Dave. And I've lost a couple of sponsees since I've been sober. And I was sponsoring this guy named Dave, and he must have been close to 60. And I'll tell you, when you see the lights turn on in somebody's eyes, because it's so inconvenient. You know what I mean? These guys want to call you all hours of the night and tell you about their tales of woe. And my sponsor taught me early in my sobriety that there are no big deals. There are just my deals. If your car just broke down and you just lost your job, we just say, "Don't worry, everything's going to be okay. You know, pray about it. Give it 24 hours. It's one day at a time. But if my car breaks down and my job, you know, then the world's falling down around me." And actually, it's not so much that way anymore, as I have learned recently from the loss of my job and this condition reappearing in my life. And I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid. This is something that people don't survive. And I'm not afraid. You know, I'm certainly not going to say that my entire amends list is done, because that'll take me the rest of my life, and I hope it takes me until I'm like 90. So thank you. But I was sponsoring this guy named Dave, and he was, for lack of a better way to put it, the worst drunk I had ever met in my life. He told me about some DTs that, you know, Stephen King couldn't have written in a movie. And we were sitting in my living room in this big, beautiful farmhouse that God lets me live in for very cheap. And I was, like, racking my brains out with this guy, because we were at the third step. We had gone on through the steps, and he just hadn't gotten the third step. You know what I mean? He couldn't, he just wasn't getting it. So we're sitting in my living room, we're talking, and Dave kind of had a little tick, and he slobbered, and I loved him to death. He had a little eye that went off to the side. And I absolutely loved having him in my car everywhere I went. I loved to keep a drunk in my pocket, because it assures my sobriety. And we're sitting in the living room, and I was like on the edge of the couch, like, Dave, please, let me just say it one more time. And I, like, threw my hands up in the air, and I'm like, God, I'm giving up on this one, because it's just not working. You know, I'm thinking that I'm in charge, is what the problem was. I think that I was thinking that I had to make Dave get this. And I threw my hands up, and I'm like, God, I give up on this one. And at that very moment, Dave sits up on the edge of his seat, and he says, you know what, Jane? It seems to me that when I was drinking, everything in my life was perfect. And now that I'm not drinking, my life's a wreck. And I was like, oh my God, he got it. Finally. And I realized it had absolutely nothing to do with me. I was trying to push this guy into sobriety. I can't make anybody stay sober. You know? I can hand them tools, just like my sponsor handed to me when I got here. And they can pick them up or they won't. You know? Dave decided to drink again. And he had a bunch of good ideas, just like I did. And he got out of the recovery house, he got himself a little apartment, he got himself a truck. The only thing he wasn't doing that was different than me was he wasn't driving Miss Daisy. And Dave called me the second night of the Sunlight of the Spirit conference, and he was smashed out of his mind. And, you know, I talked to him for a little bit, and my sponsor has taught me, you know, you talk to a guy until he's not listening. And then if you, you know, because specifically I had people staying at my house from out of town, and they were there for the X or the Sunlight of the Spirit. And so I said to him, Dave, why don't you give me a holler tomorrow if you can sober up a little bit? And he said, okay, Jamie, and I just wanted to tell you that, you know, you were the first person that walked up to me in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I love you. And in the morning they found Dave dead. And so it's little stories like that that keep Jamie Filippelli trying to be in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I am not exempt from fear. I am not exempt from stopping into the bar on the way home with Lori and getting a drink. But I have a bit of a guarantee if I show up and do this, whether we're driving into the middle of the night and think we're not going to find a place, you know, or if I just find a guy who looks like he's absolutely scared to death, hanging around the frays of the crowd, because we're a scary group of people, believe me. My sponsor calls it the greatest show on earth. I'm not too sure about that, but you know, I know that we're crazy. I hang out with us. But if I do those kind of things on a daily basis, I am pretty much guaranteed that I can go to bed sober tonight. And I don't know what time we started, so I'm kind of trying to... 5 minutes? Okay. I already ran it, started it late. I don't want to run it over, too. I got enough amends to make. I don't need to add some more. But I do. I absolutely love Alcoholics Anonymous. Forgot about that a little bit this summer. Was sure I wasn't an alcoholic. I got involved in this. And these are some of the things that have happened to me through Alcoholics Anonymous. There's something that's very near and dear to my heart. It's a disease that I've watched a lot of people die from. And I got this job running a hair salon. Because I'm really good at that kind of stuff. I'm very organized. Where it came from, I have no idea, because my house is an absolute mess. But I'm very organized when it comes to business, and I got this guy set up in business and got his got a computer system set up. Clueless on that, too, because I'm a dinosaur when it comes to that. I can, like, get my email once in a while. But I would show up at work, and I would say, God, I have no idea why you've given me this job, but could you please use my hands to do this job? Because I know I can't do it. I am completely incapable. I know where all of the power and all of the knowledge comes, and I also know that if I tap into that power and knowledge and know that it's yours, I can do absolutely anything on this planet. And if you got what that sentence was, good for you, because I didn't. And he let me run the salon. And I, through this, I got involved. I got all of my people involved, and they hate me for it, in a benefit called the Black and White Party. And it is to benefit people who suffer from HIV and AIDS. There's a couple of local organizations that we donate the money to, and we get really big names like Sandra Bernhardt to come and perform for our little tiny benefit in York, Pennsylvania. So I got involved in this benefit, and it took me away from Alcoholics Anonymous a little bit, which is fearful for me. I talked to my sponsor, and I talked to Lori a lot, and she's like, Jamie, you're doing AA. I'm like, I'm not sponsoring anybody actively right now, which was not true. I was. I just wasn't seeing them as much as I was used to, and I try not to look for balance in life. I even dread saying that word to my sponsor. I'm looking for balance, because I end up thinking it's the end of days when I'm looking for balance. So I got involved in this little benefit, and like I said, I have no idea what God puts in my path or why, but I am now a member of the board of directors for a nationwide nonprofit agency. Not sure why, but I was asked to do it, and it helps people that have a condition that's very near and dear to my heart that I've watched a lot of people die from. What I'm doing there, I have no clue. I'm like, are you guys sure? Do you know who I am? But after I got involved in this little thing, I got laid off and then fired, and faced with this little condition that I'm currently dealing with, whatever. And if I'd have been drinking right now when all of this stuff came down the pike at me, because see, I used to think that things were happening to me. Everything in the world was happening to me. You know what I mean? You just wrecked your car, and did you see what just happened to me? I had to see that car accident, you know? And now I know that things in my life are happening for me. This is an absolute dream come true. Jamie Filippelli, the town drunk, is on the board of directors for a nationwide nonprofit agency. I mean, I don't get it. You know, I lost the job, but that job has led into other things for me. We'll see if I get to go back to work. We're going to leave that in God's hands. I still have rent. I still have bills. This is not the first time that I've had this experience in sobriety. But what I know is that I have brought myself back to Alcoholics Anonymous, because I was having my little whatever. I was telling my sponsor it was a hiatus because I was hiding out in Alcoholics Anonymous like booze. He loves when I call him with a great idea. And I'll tell you, I'm very lucky because my sponsorship loves me. He drives up my, and I have a half mile long dirt driveway that's not fun. He drives up my driveway just to make sure that I'm okay. And he doesn't tell me anything that I need to do. He says, I just love you and I miss you and I want to make sure you're okay. And I don't have fear about this condition. I don't have fear about much. I don't have fear about how the rent's going to get paid. It always seems to take care of itself. It's not the first time that I've been through this. But I also know that God doesn't teach me lessons. He shows me signs. I'm not sure what he showed me this past summer. Maybe just that I'm a drunk. You're definitely drunk, and you need to be in AA, because it was getting a little uncomfortable. I didn't think about drinking. I'm not recommending to anybody that you stop going to meetings. Please don't think that I'm telling you that, because I know where I need to be. I jumped in Lori's car tonight to come down here and speak. And I'm not patting myself on the back. I'm just telling you how God works in my life. The minute it's like when I took that third step, when I realized that I am no longer my business, and neither are you. None of you are my business. Not always easy, because I'm sure I can tell you how to do some things better than you're already doing them. I'm sure of it. Still alcoholic. When I read that in the big book the first time, like the actor trying to run the whole show, I was like, oh my God, who wrote this book about me in the 30s? But I know when I open myself up, just like I did in the third step, when I offer myself to God and ask him to use me how he sees fit for whatever job it is that he has for me, he gets me right back in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous like that. We were driving up here. I got two people called me to speak in other places. And it's good, because I will leave AA. And I will leave AA thinking I'm okay to leave AA, whether I think I'm alcoholic or not. I've done it for long enough. I deserve a break. I need a hiatus. I'm just taking the summer off. All of those things I have said in the last 6 months. I've been helping everybody. When do I get mine? I got mine for the first 37 years of my life. And I got a seat in Alcoholics Anonymous because of it. Don't regret it. Not unhappy about it. I absolutely, it wasn't a half hour drive. A 2.5 hour drive. We said we weren't sure where we were going. I have again fallen back in love with Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'll tell you what, my recommendation for anybody who thinks they might not be alcoholic, stick around a little while. You'll hear somebody who will guarantee you that you're alcoholic. If you are, if you're not, then go have fun. Because if I wasn't such an alcoholic, I would be smashed right now. Absolutely smashed. So I know in my heart that this is where I belong. And it's not because anybody told me that this is where I belong. It's because I know in my heart this is where I belong. I am alcoholic, and I am a hopeless alcoholic. And without Alcoholics Anonymous, good sponsorship, God, and staying in the middle, I say I like to keep a drunk in my pocket. Because my sponsor told me a long time ago, I need to be in the middle of AA. I need to be following somebody who's doing what I want to be doing. And I need to have some guys following me, hopefully wanting to do what I'm doing. And when I get away from that, I don't necessarily get totally miserable. Although, you know, some substances look attractive to me. I get discontent. I get unhappy. I start paying mind in other people's business. And I've noticed that in the last month. But I was hanging in there because summer was almost over. I was getting my summer. But when I open my heart, God comes right in, just like he has every time. And I'm sorry that I rambled. I'm sorry that we were late. I'm sorry for the jeans. And I want to thank you guys for asking me to come out here and speak. It's an absolute pleasure. And I hope that you fall in love with Alcoholics Anonymous the way that I have. And thanks, guys.